Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. And in this daily editorial, I am introducing a new company to the show and a relatively new company to the financial markets. The company is called Fathom Nickel, traded on the CSE under the symbol FNI. The company went public this year, middle of the year, right around May 2021. Now, the company was private, I believe, since 2015 and has done some work on the flagship property here, this Albert Lake project in Saskatchewan. I am chatting with the CEO, Brad Vandenbush. Now, Brad, before we get into the project, take us through corporately what happened with this company. Being private for a few years, now coming public, how did it come together?
Well, thanks, Corey. So initially, Ian Fraser and myself, our VP Exploration, and myself, President and CEO, were the founders in 2015. We had a corporate vision, basically, and mandate to build a resource exploration development company that was focused on supplying minerals to support the green economy and the rising demand in the battery and EV space. So we were focused on high-grade opportunities in top-tier jurisdictions. Initial focus was on high-grade nickel, and we have our flagship property, which is the Rottenstone project in Saskatchewan, which is high-grade nickel, copper, PGE, and we strive to be an overachiever in the ESG efforts, and recently aligned with some financial partners and took the company public, as Corey mentioned, to basically finance the project and future opportunities and really have a solid, aggressive story and news flow moving forward.
So let's chat about the flagship project here, this Albert Lake project. As you mentioned, it does host the historic Rottenstone mine. What insights can you give us in terms of the history here of the Rottenstone mine? Any production data? What other work has been done here?
Yeah, so Rottenstone was discovered in 1929. So the Albert Lake project is our overall project area, but within it is the Rottenstone mine that was discovered in 1929. It had intermittent exploration up until about the mid 60s, at which time it went into production based on approximately a 40,000 ton resource, and they mined 26,000 tons from 65 to 69, a small deposit, but very high grade. So the grades that were coming out of that Rottenstone mine were about 3.2% nickel, 1.8 copper, and just shy of 10 grams per ton of PGEs, mainly platinum and palladium with some rhodium as well and some cobalt. So a very, very high grade deposit by anybody's stroke of imagination. So we picked up the project in 2015. Ian had some previous knowledge of it from a group he'd worked with, a uranium company, and it became a stranded asset within this uranium company, within Uravan Minerals. And we had the opportunity to pick it up in 2015 at the bottom of the nickel market. So we acquired it for some shares and a royalty, and it basically became the heart of our Albert Lake project that we've since grown to over 90,000 hectares and have a regional play as well as looking near the Rottenstone mine area for further extension.
So before we move on to some of the work that you guys have done, just a quick question regarding some of that historic mining. When you have a mixture of metals here, like high-grade nickel, copper, and some PGEs, I know some of the more geology-focused investors want to know, were there any metallurgy issues? Can you provide some insights here, please?
Well, we actually did some metallurgy work, and in a nutshell, it's quite simple metallurgy. It's a magmatic nickel sulfide deposit. It's ultramafic hosted, as will the future discoveries on the project, we believe. We did a metallurgical study on a bulk sample in 2017, I believe it was. And with just basic, simple crushing and processing, we were able to get more than 90% recovery of the nickel and copper, 80% plus of the precious metals, the platinum, palladium, and a bit of gold. So we're quite happy with that. It looks like there's not going to be any bottlenecks in the processing of this type of deposit.
All right. So now, in terms of the work that you guys have done and maybe some of the goals for this project, we should clarify that you are looking at this from very much an exploration-focused standpoint. So what is some of the exploration that you guys have done over that period of time, the last about 6 years while you've held this project?
We acquired it in 2015. We raised approximately $1.5 to $2 million ourselves, mainly through management and a few friends and family as a private company. We spent most of that time building the science behind the project, basically recompiling all of the existing data. It came with a large database of information right from the beginning of the project back in the 40s, really. Basically built a brand new geological model and set it up with a structured, focused exploration, systematic exploration program that is poised for success. This project's never had that. It's basically been a high-grade project. The historic Rottenstone mine was found because it was right on surface. It was a very prominent, rusty gossan of mineralized material that was very easy to spot. And the premise is that, you know, a system like this doesn't come it's not one small deposit. It's got to come from a very large magmatic system. So Ian in particular has always believed that this is referred to as the Mother Rottenstone, that there's, you know, this has to be coming from a large system, somewhat similar to what people see with Glencore's Raglan deposit in Quebec, or even possibly a Voisey's Bay in Labrador. So our focus was to use the information that we could compile from the historic mine, but take that, create a fingerprint, and apply it to the rest of the project. So we've been doing a series of geophysical and geochemical studies, a targeting exercise essentially, to find other areas that have that same signature as Rottenstone. And we've been having very good success with that. So we've got some very good targets for our upcoming programs that we're going to focus on.
Care to elaborate on any of these targets, some of the more high priority targets, and again, kind of the overall vision that you have for attacking these targets?
Okay, so the two main targets that we have right now, one of them will be referred to in some of the press releases, termed the island showing area. So this is an area about a half a kilometer from the Rottenstone, the historic Rottenstone mine. It's got very similar geology. The setting's the same. There's ultramafics, the mineral assemblage, the copper, nickel, PGEs, chrome, magnesium, all the key components to this system occur in that particular showing. We found it through a surface geochemistry and geophysics. We've drilled one hole into it. We've drilled into the right mineralogy, as I mentioned, not through the center of the high grade. So that's going to be a main focus when we return to the field in January 2022 to continue drilling. We need ice to drill that particular target. So we've got three or four holes planned there. And we've got a second target that we refer to as the Dime, which is about 4 kilometers to the south of the historic Rottenstone mine. So we're going to focus on that as well in this upcoming program. Same thing. It's got the right mineral assemblage. It's got the right geochemical and geophysical signature, and it's got a structural trap. So all three of these bode very well to a new discovery downhole in this particular area. And then we've got at least a dozen other targets that we're in the process of refining to a drill ready stage that some of them will be ready as we're doing this program in 2022.
Now, I understand the company did some drilling this year, two different programs, I believe, one more in Q1, the winter drill program, and then also a program that you're more or less in the middle of that started in fall and will continue next year. Can you give us some more insights on that second program, the one that you're more in the middle of right now, please?
Okay, so we had a 6,000 meter program plan that we started in September. So September, October, we drilled the targets that we could get to from land prior to freeze up. So we got about 6 weeks in September, October. We drilled 3,000 meters of that program. unfortunately, there's a big backlog in the assay data. So we're just getting the remainder of those results. So in the next 2 weeks, we will start to put out drill results from that program. So we've left the equipment in, the drilling equipment, the permits in place, the camps in place, the crews are hired, and we will be picking up that the second half of that program once the ice is thick enough to utilize for the program, and it should start about mid to late January. And we've actually added a bit to the program, so there will be another 5,000 meters that we plan to drill between January and March. And mostly these targets that I mentioned, plus other ones that need the winter ice to access them.
So big picture here, Brad, and I realize it's early stage, so no one's going to exactly hold you to all of these plans. But when it comes to a potential resource or even mineable area here, are you looking at multiple pits to feed a central operation? Are you looking for maybe tying together some of these deposits into a larger pit? What would the overall strategy in terms of mining, big picture, be?
Well, we expect this to be to be a number of high grade pits, that some of them at surface, and we're focusing down to about 250 meters. So if you wanted to compare that with some known situations, basically Raglan, Glencore's Raglan is that type of a deposit. They're structurally trapped high-grade ultramafic deposits. When it started off, there was a couple of 10 to 40,000 ton pits that were discovered. They've now got 140, I believe. It's one of Glencore's most economic deposits. So this is what we're envisioning for Rottenstone. So it's basically going to be a hub and spoke type operation, like you alluded to, where you've got a number of pits, central processing facility, and again, we're targeting high grades. So the footprint, the capital cost, the number of overall tons will be relatively small in our vision from what a lot of the mining projects are in the world right now. So another one that's very similar in I guess model would be Talon Resources in Minnesota. So that type of situation, not a multi-kilometer lower grade deposit, but a number of high grade pits and underground workings that feed into central processing.
All right, before we move on from the project, let's just talk a little bit about the environment in Saskatchewan for exploring. It's not maybe one of the most well-known places in Canada, but there is a lot of activity in Saskatchewan broadly. What can you tell us about the general area that this Albert Lake project is in, please?
All right, so geologically, it's in the Canadian Shield of Canada. So it's in what they call the Trans-Hudson Corridor. So the Trans-Hudson Corridor is a highly mineralized zone which hosts many of Canada's largest nickel copper-based metal opportunities or projects. So as what I mentioned, Voisey's Bay in Labrador, Raglan in Quebec, the four main projects in Manitoba, which is right next door, Lynn Lake, Thompson, Snow Lake, and Flin Flon are all within it. And that belt swings through Saskatchewan and down south into the U.S. So, as you mentioned, Saskatchewan hasn't been known as particularly a base metal or a mining area outside of the uranium business for the most part. And there's a reason for that. So back in the early days, when a lot of these nickel copper deposits were being discovered, when there was a big push, mainly back in the 50s, 60s, there was Saskatchewan had a crown corporation called SMDC, Saskatchewan Mining Development Corp. And they had the right to become a 51% partner in all major projects in the province. So essentially, most of the mining companies didn't want a government partner. So a lot of that exploration during that boom time stopped at the border. That's completely changed. The last 20, 25 years, Saskatchewan's been a very mining-friendly jurisdiction. In fact, it's been continuously ranked in the top 10, and it's been number one a couple of times in the Fraser Institute jurisdictions for mining, both in Canada and the world. So it's really been recognized as a good place to work. The government's very streamlined. The permitting process is good. Ian and myself have a lot of experience in the province. Ian mostly with the geology. He actually was a mine geologist that and he put one of the gold mines into production and was their key technical person on it. The Comus mine back in the early 2000s. And I was also working on that project and was the environmental manager. So I have a history of working with community First Nations and the permitting, actually putting a mine into production in Saskatchewan. So we love the jurisdiction. You know, it's a great place to work. It's mining friendly. It's streamlined. And it's getting the attention of some of the majors now. Like I said, that belt continues on. So it's relatively unexplored compared to its neighbors. And there's a real opportunity to make discoveries there. And we're seeing Rio Tinto's been interested in the province. It's done a couple of joint ventures. It did a $30 million JV with Forum Energy Metals on their Janus Lake project. They've done a joint venture on a nickel project with ALX Uranium. And BHP's been interested in it. So BHP, you might know, has already moved their head office for nickel and base metals from Santiago, Chile to Toronto. So they find Canada the best place to be looking at new opportunities and discoveries in this space. And they already have a big presence in Saskatchewan, not in the nickel copper business, but in the potash business. So they've got a major potash operation in Saskatchewan as well. So they know the jurisdiction. And they're looking. So it's coming on people's radar. It's underexplored, and we think we've got a fabulous footprint in the province with our 90,000 hectare project, surrounding an incredibly high grade past producer. So that's why we're there.
Brad, let's also talk a little bit about the team here. Let's start off with you. It is your first time on the show. What's some of your background in the resource sector?
Okay, so I'm a geologist by training. I've worked in the consulting industry. I've the last 20 years I've worked mainly in mining. I guess for the last five companies I've been VP exploration through a variety of projects, gold, base metals, and coal throughout Canada and South America. This is my first go as the CEO of a company, and I'm really enjoying it. I'm getting to see the the broad brush of the investors as well as the technical side. And I've got Ian Fraser as my VP exploration. Ian's got 35 years in the business as well. Ian and I have worked together on a half a dozen projects over our career. We make a good team. We're the founders of this group. A lot of operational experience on Ian's side. He's been involved in a number of successful projects that he's helped bring into production. Involved in Casa Berardi, the Comus mine that I mentioned in Saskatchewan, and in the Byers Gold Belt. Ian and I were both involved in a grassroots project that turned into a mine in Colombia called Cisneros near Medellin, Colombia. So, I think we're both on the board. We're both founders of the company. Shortly after forming it in 2015, Doug Porter joined us as the CFO. To round out the business and financial and accounting side that we needed. And we've rounded out with three independent board members, John Morgan, Mark Cummings, and Eugene Chen, who all bring a phenomenal amount of experience. Mentioned John Morgan in a bit more detail. So John's had a lifetime in the mining business. He's a senior executive with Minelta Group, Minelta Coal in Alberta in his early days. And John's most recently, he's done a number of projects that he's built and sold for incredible upside on the shareholder value side of things. He was a director with Grand Cache Coal when it sold to Marubeni for over $1 billion, and he was just more recently the CEO. For Atlantic Gold, who was sold to St. Barbara, the Australian group, for I think it was $700 million. So John's been there and done that a number of times, built companies and positioned them for liquidation event, I guess you would say. So that's our team, and I'm very proud of it. I think we've got everything we need to grow this company, to advance Albert Lake the way we want to, and to keep our eyes on other opportunities that may fall in front of us, as far as high grade nickel copper in particular.
All right, Brad, thank you for those insights too. Maybe an acquisition on the horizon, but you do have that team that you have put together here that can move this project forward. Let's now talk about share structure. I'm seeing about 55 million shares outstanding on a fully diluted basis, about 67 million. What does management hold and any other key or large shareholders, please?
Management holds about 12% of the company. We've got a good following. The balance of the shares are held by a combination of retail and institution. We have about 19 million shares held by institutions, and a little over 25 million held by retail. The institutions that really got behind us and supported us were mainly Echelon and Sprott, and then some of their clients. So they've been a really big help in this process in the last year that have been behind our financing, major shareholders. We've got about 7 million warrants outstanding, and management and insiders have about 3 million options. So that, like you said, Corey, that rounds it out to about 67 million.
Well, then how about cash in the bank? Where does the company stand as we turn the corner into the new year 2022?
So right now we're sitting with about $8 million in the bank, $4 million in flow through and $4 million in hard dollars. So the flow through is all slated to go directly into the ground at Albert Lake. And we'll be starting, as we mentioned, in January on a drilling program. So well funded to take the project forward all the way through 2022 with a very aggressive program.
All right, let's wrap it up here, Brad, just with a quick comment on Catalyst news flow that investors, those watching the company, can look forward to in the new year.
All right. As I mentioned, we're just getting the last of our drill results from the September, October 21 program. So that will be coming out. There'll be a news release or two with those results and the interpretation. We will be starting drilling again in January. So I would expect to see steady news flow every 2 or 3 weeks as that program progresses. And then our plan is to continue exploration into the summer after a breakup hiatus. We need to take a couple of months off in March, April. Well, the ice comes off the lake, and then we'll go back into the field and continue our groundwork and additional drilling. So we see constant news flow from the exploration standpoint starting in about 2 weeks.
All right, Brad, really appreciate this introduction here. If anybody has any follow-up questions regarding anything about Fathom Nickel, please email me, fleck@kereport.com. I will get Brad to address those, and I will follow up on the back of some more news out of the company, especially some drill results and even the restart of drilling in the new year. Brad, thank you very much for your time. I hope you have a very Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and let's touch base in 2022.
Great. Thank you, Corey. Thanks for having me on the show, and you have a great Christmas and New Year as well, and to all your listeners.